C1B, 1 and 2.
Number 11B.
So, let's be open in consciousness that we are willing to accept really that step forward to investigate the text scientifically and be able to accept laws. What do we gain if we can see laws in a text? Is it just that we feel, oh yes, that's wonderful, everything goes along a law? That's more definite, and that's nicer than if it would be just chaotic. It's a law, all right, so what? That's the great question. So what? What does a law mean? And this is naturally the great practical import of a law, that once we can state a law exactly through Christianly scientific terms, that every law lends itself for infinite application. For infinite application in a way that they are not spelled out in the textbook. You know, shall I put it in another way? If Newton found the law of gravitation and could define that law of gravitation just through a few elements that always have to be there in that formula, that then when he has found just that simple law, he has found a principle, so to say, on which every phenomena that has to do with gravitation can be defined. So that a law is fundamental to the millions of application of that law. No matter now if I consider how the gravitational force is working, say between the moon and the earth, and bringing about the tides and the floods, or if I calculate why a stone that is thrown away falls down, why a book and how a book falls from the table, no matter what the phenomena of gravitation is, I can always take the same law, and on the same law, calculate the phenomena. Therefore, here, once we have found out the law, we can apply that same law, not only to the ideas that are stated in the textbook, but that we can close the textbook. And if we are facing any problem that has to do with that question of idea dissolving illusion, you see, that's the subject, that anything that comes along in our life, in practical life, where idea has to dissolve illusion, we can take in now this law of the subtones and reason along that law in order to solve this proposition. So we don't have to go to the textbook and say, now here, let's take any example, say, you are faced with a material law. And say, oh, this material law, or a legal law, whatever law it is, that is actually a counterfeit of the divine law. And I actually would only like to be governed by the divine law, not with this material law. And you have a question, perhaps, that a medical law is working in the body and predicting all sorts of things what can happen with the body. Or things like that. You are perhaps faced with any kind of false law, and you know it's counterfeit of what? Of a divine law. And then what are we going to do now? Now we know that an idea or the divine law should dissolve a material law or a false law. And you have stated actually the subject of the science of being. Is that clear to this point? Yes. Very clear, huh? So you have stated a law of the chapter of science of being. you have not stated the law of, say, the chapter of prayer or of atonement and Eucharist, you see? But just this very specific law. So already you can see that out of the many laws that exist, you have touched one specific law and say, now, what am I going to do with that proposition? If we don't know the law and only know the proposition, as perhaps we have known it up to now, that there is a false law and that there is a divine law, we up to now we perhaps would just have seen that this false law is actually governed or by the divine law, and that the divine law is controlling perhaps the false law, but we would have left it at one or the other statement. Whereas now we would take it and put it through the law and say, the law says, all right, in mind, let's first state the contraposition. Let's first state it and see, there is a divine law, and that divine law is from mind. Only mind creates divine laws, or mind creates only divine laws. And therefore, material laws are not created by God, are not created by mind. They are therefore false laws, they are therefore only beliefs, let's say. So you have stated the contraposition. Then you go to spirit and you say, but I know now that those laws created by mind are really the real laws, those that are substantial, that cannot be gainsaid. They are really existing. And the material laws or the medical laws or whatever is under consideration, they are only counterfeit laws. They are not really real. They have no real substance within themselves. And therefore they cannot really unfold something good. They can never bring forth something that is positive. Yes? Then you go to soul and you take that law, the question of law, and say to yourself, yes, so if those laws that mind knows about, that mind has created, that mind has produced, and which are spiritual laws, and which are the reality, which are real, and partake of the nature of spirit and of true substance, then I give everything to those laws. I put my weight on those divine laws and consider them superior to all the other laws. I rise in consciousness to the point where I feel I give everything to these divine laws, and these divine laws control lower laws. I see that the laws of mind are the higher laws than the material laws. And so I have a tone of soul. Then my thought may go further and say, but, you know, I'm still a bit afraid about those material laws, medical laws, because they say they can do all sorts of things with me. They operate by themselves, you know, they are quite terrific, those laws. And so my thought goes and says, what kind of authority do they have? Have they a divine authority behind it or not? Have they a divine prince behind it or not, on which they can operate? And I say, no. But the divine laws, they have a divine prince behind themselves. They have the authority of God behind themselves. And nothing can stay that. Can you say stay that? Nothing can oppose that. Huh? Nothing can go against that. The will of God will be done. I close now those ideas with the divine principle and the authority of the prince, and begin to see that the power of an idea is the power of the infinite one, of these divine laws, and that the material laws have nothing from God, not the least little bit from God. And I put, so to say, the carpet, what do you say, the carpet under their feet away, or pull it out, huh? They have nothing to stand on it anymore. Huh? And so I say, all right, you have to fall if I put away the floor. The carpet. All right. Thank God. Everybody who for the next 20 years will listen to this tape will know what I want to say. Well, I'm very grateful to them for the imagination they must have had to understand me. But the spiritual idea they will understand. At the moment I see that these material laws have no divine principle to stand on. They fall. They have to fall. They have, therefore, to experience the counterfeit of life. They decay. They are doomed. They are doomed. They will be... they fall to pieces. Whereas I see that those divine laws that have the infinite divine principle behind themselves, that they will lift me now right out of any situation, right out of the doom of material laws, and will therefore give me the newness of law, the newness of life. And I begin to feel that they vitalize my whole being, that they begin to live my being. And as I do that, I begin to see at the point of truth, really, that therefore that which has a principle behind itself and expresses and practices itself as life is actually the factuality of those laws. And I begin to see the factuality of those laws and see that all the other laws are therefore erroneous laws, and that therefore the consciousness of the factuality of the divine laws is really destroying in within me the possibility of believing in erroneous laws. I just feel that's all error. It's all a misunderstanding. It's an erroneous, a false concept. And as I do that and fill my consciousness with the only reality of those divine laws, my consciousness is filled and filled with the actuality and the rhythm and the operation of the divine laws, and I feel at the point of love, then in that case the divine laws are the only laws. Actually then a law that at the point of life falls to pieces and at the point of truth are seen to be erroneous are actually no laws. Because a law that is not true is not a law. And so at the point of love I see there are only the laws of God, the laws of mind operating. There is no material law. Yes? So have you seen what I've been doing? When, say, we were faced with the question of material law or medical law or whatever negative kind of law you may think about, when we are faced with that question and had to see that we have to solve it, could we go to the text of the textbook and read somewhere something that would show us the way how to solve it? No, no. Why not? Because Mrs. Eddy had chosen another example to show the law of mind dissolving the opposite. She had chosen in mind, as an idea of mind, basis. The basis of mind. Is the basis of mind metaphysical or is it material? And she explained through mind, the idea of basis, not of law, not of power, not of creator. Can you see? Mind has many ideas characterizing mind. And we know them through our study of the synonyms, that mind is characterized by many, many ideas. Among others, as basis. Among others, as law. So she has taken one, naturally a very fundamental one of mind, and has given the law of the idea of mind exemplified, because she has to exemplified through the idea of basis, metaphysical basis versus material basis. She could therefore also have given us the same illustration by taking the example of divine law versus material law. Just the same. Is that clear? Yeah? See? And therefore we can see the terrific impact of that textbook, that it says, I give you the law, the application is your business. The textbook says, I cannot give you a text that covers every example that you ever will have in your life, because that would fill the earth with a book that is as big as the earth. I give you the principle of it, the law of it. And so she gave the law, but in order to explain a law, she must give a text. And in order to, and the text must be applied to something that explains it, to an incident, to a phenomena that explains it. Just as the law of gravitation, nobody sees anywhere the law of gravitation. Therefore, one must give an example. Say, you know what gravitation is? It is then when the apple falls from the tree and goes right down vertically to the earth. It doesn't swirl around. That's one example how to show the law of gravitation. But the apple is never the law of gravitation. The apple falling is not the only phenomena of the law of gravitation. So here too in that textbook, that example which Mrs. Eddy gives is only an example. It is not the only possibility how that law of the Christ works. Therefore, that science, that one can take a general law and say, this general law is now so general that any of the millions of different phenomena that encounter my life where the problem is, how can I dissolve a belief through an idea, is this law now applicable? Yes? Everybody got it? Please tell me if anybody got it. I go over it happily again because I want that is clear, you see. Or people then go home and say, I distort Mrs. Eddy's textbook, or things like that, you see. Or that I throw the textbook out of the window, you see. And things like that they then say about my teaching, because they can't see what I'm teaching. Yeah? So is that clear? Everybody? Yes, yes, yes? Good, good, good. This is terrific, you know. You see, I taught that 25 years ago to large audiences. It didn't make the slightest impact. Not the slight. Nobody ever talked about it again. Nobody. I talked it the first place to an audience that were about 120, 130 of the best Dolly students. It didn't make any impression. Not at all. Just as if I had said nothing. So I had to wait. And this is the first time again here in America that I had the courage to present it again. I did do it a bit more slowly so as to bring it home, and I hope that this time it is not a premature idea, but a mature idea that falls on a mature ground, and that it will grow. And that it will grow especially in regard to seeing what a textbook means. Can you now see what I said at the beginning? A textbook is not a reading book. If you have a novel, it's a reading book. You can only read that story in a novel about which the text speaks. You can't read, say, Gone with the Wind and read into it, the Forsyte Saga. You can't do that. You have to stick to that one example. That's why they are so dull. Once you have read them, it's over, you see. You can't make anything out of it, because it's one out of the billion and billions of possibility to present something. Whereas a textbook does the other thing. It says, I only present you that fundamental thing which from eternity to eternity has always been the same and never changed. But that same thing you can apply billions and billions of times. Is that not the difference between a reading book and a textbook? Yeah? Therefore, can you see how wrong it is if the students of Christian Science consider a textbook as a reading book? We come back really to that whole thing that we try to put the new wine into old bottles. Again, that we have a new paradigm and then try to put the new paradigm into the old paradigm. Mrs. Eddy presented a new paradigm, saying, I am going to write to you a book that has only to do with fundamental principles and laws and orders. They are so fundamental that they will cover billions and billions of examples of that law. So I present to you fundamentals, and not the individual application as the only application. And then comes the students and read it as if that would be the only way they can read it. And it is the tragedy, perhaps, of this textbook. I wish really dearly that Mrs. Eddy's textbook would be understood as a textbook, and that the students of Christian Science would put their whole heart into the textbook, instead of being bothered about all sorts of other things in the Christian Science movement that they see. Let's go to the core of Mrs. Eddy's discovery. If the core is pure, the surrounding will also be pure. But let's get to the core of our discovery, and that is science. Science is what we said. Science is knowledge reduced to laws, and those laws embodied in a system. Now we can see that the more we investigate the textbook, the more we see the laws, we see the relationships from one chapter to the other chapter, we begin to see the relationships really within the whole teaching of Christian Science. And that is what Mrs. Eddy discovered and gave to the world, and which alone can really help the world. Yes, so it is nice. Huh? It really shows that if one considers the textbook this way, one makes the textbook bigger and not smaller. It becomes bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because one sees it is only the nucleus of, say, only the center of the whole circumference of being, and that being, small b, is nothing else but the infinite reflection of these laws going on that Mrs. Eddy has stated. Yes, that's that. Is that good? Okay. So we make a break here.